Yeah.
Arcane.
We're on.
What?
We're on now.
We're on. Okay, fine. Well, still, it remains true that Arcane, if I know your birthday, and if it falls within the class, you'll get a cookie. But let's talk about the details later. The other thing is that there is this, can I have this? There is this course participation form which the department mandates. And so I want you to fill it out. And the reason I showed it on the video is because I will scan it, and I want the people from Holland to also fill it out, because they really are, you know, if they are still following, I should know about it, and so should the department. Okay, the other thing I remind you, so you know, I mostly do Mathematica games, or not mostly do, I do lots of Mathematica games, And if you don't have a copy of Mathematica, you're missing half the class. So you really should. And in a way, you're missing, I think sort of a side benefit from this class is to learn how to implement mathematics in Mathematica. And it makes you much more powerful. I mean, it really does make you stronger mathematicians if you can, you know, instead of spending days wondering whether something is true or not, you check it, you know it's true, and you move on. It's worth the, you should learn that. So make sure that you have Mathematica, make sure that you play with it, make sure that you repeat everything that I do. Everything is on the web, so you can always download it and play with it, modify it, ask yourself questions, I don't know. Anyway, and then the last comment that I had sort of the before the real beginning is I don't know if we should change the meeting times. So I don't know if it's even remotely possible. But if it is, basically for the benefit of Juan, Juan, you can't, so I don't know if it, you can't make it on Thursdays either, right?
Yeah, Tuesday and Thursday have to be at UTM. But I think Monday, Wednesday, or Friday.
But these are also my busy days.
Yeah.
So, okay. And when are you back? Can we switch it to late on Tuesday or Thursday?
I'll be back here. Well, 4:30 is safe. So 4:30 on Tuesday, I'll be back here. Uh-huh. But on Thursday, I have tutorial at 5. So.
Okay. Does this make sense for you?
But I was thinking, can we make maybe today 2 hours, but I don't.
Oh, swap the week, that's an option too. So you know what, maybe I'll circulate an email later, but okay, so you know, not now, but we, it might make sense for one sake.
Okay, sorry.
Okay, now,
oh, for you.
Now, mathematics, so let me remind you where we were. Maybe you should aim for the screen. So, we're still playing the same game. So given a note and an element of A tensor A, where A is the universal enveloping algebra, and this element is called R and has to satisfy this Young-Baxter equation, we can get an invariant by multiplying along the note. The Lie algebra we're working with for the moment is the HELF Lie algebra modulo the relations written here. I didn't yet tell you where we got it from, but it comes from a very natural place. And then it has a classical R matrix, which is H tensor L plus E tensor F, and the exponential of it solves the Young-Baxter equation, so you can get not invariants out of it. And I'll move on. Completely by chance, like a few days ago, while searching for something completely different, I found a mail folder that was misplaced, and within that mail folder there was an email from Dylan Thurston, which I completely forgot about, sent to me on 23 May 1999.
Wow. Related to Bill?
What?
Is it Thurston related to Bill?
Yeah, he's son.
Oh.
Yes. And he's a collaborator of mine and a good friend, and we're still in touch with him. Anyway, so he, I think at the time, he sent it from the, not from the train, because there was no Wi-Fi at the time, but he must have written it on the train from Paris to Geneva, where he, in Paris, he just met Duflo, and Duflo told him that there is a very interesting Lie algebra. Well, okay, I mean, you can read it just like me. I mean, I don't have any memory of that. I just have found this email. So Duflo wrote him, and Duflo is a well-known Lie theorist. So so he wrote, here is a Lie algebra that plays the same role for reducible Lie algebras as SL2 plays for semi-simple ones. And then the Lie algebra is given by these commutation relations, which you can compare are the same as ours, except the naming is different. So Z is our H, T is our L, and X and Y are our E and F. And Duflo also gives a matrix representation. So it's a sub-algebra of the 3x3 matrices written here. Okay? So I've actually always knew it. Well, okay, I knew. Okay, this is nicer than presentations I had before. So it's these matrices. Okay? Now, I really have no idea why Duflo thinks it's so fundamental from Lie theoretic perspectives. I just don't know. So, and I'm sure Dylan doesn't know either, because it's 18 years ago. And Duflo, I think, is 77 now. I don't know if he's active. I mean, maybe I will try to find him. So I really don't know what's meant here, that this is somehow fundamental. But okay, here it is, it's fundamental. Anyway, now that it's fundamental, we can test it. Okay? So let's define rho H. So rho is the Duflo representation. So the Duflo representation applied to H is, well, actually there are sign issues. It's not exactly the same Lie algebra. Or it is exactly the same Lie algebra, but the signs don't match. So H is the sort of put minus one here, E put one here, L put one here, F put one here. So this is exactly the same matrices as here. Okay? And furthermore, let's define that the bracket of X, which is a matrix, and Y, which is a matrix, is defined to be just their product, matrix product. And then let's check if these are indeed the right commutation relations. So let's compute the bracket of E with L, of F with L, of E with F, of H with E, of H with L, and H with F. And if we're lucky, this should be the same, okay. So E with L came out to be negative E. F with L came out to be F, and so on. So basically, this verifies that this really is a representation of our Lie algebra. We'll use it in a minute, okay? Anyway, this said, there is a whole chunk that's unchanged, so we've implemented our Lie algebra G0. You know, well, okay, this is really should be Gothic, so I should be... make it escape, Gothic, G, escape. Now it's Gothic. Good. So it's implemented. I have nothing new to say. I made no changes. Everything is the same. But I remind you that with what we had, we could already compute the invariant of knots to some degree. So in particular, if you look at the trefoil, then you have a crossing between 4 and 1, and then a crossing between 2 and 5, and then a crossing between 6 and 3. So if you set the target to degree to be 2 and multiply, well, we did this last time, then you get this big product of elements, but that was before stitching. So now I have to stitch in order. So take the same thing, make the target degree 3 just for fun, and stitch 1 and 2 to 1, 1 and 3 to 1, 1, basically stitch all of them into 1. So you get everything on just one strand, and this is the answer. This is the invariant of the trefoil to degree 3. You know, if you want it to degree 4, then you copy-paste it down here, and recompute to degree 4, and wait. Oh, not wait too long, right. So only 3 seconds. Let's do it to degree 5, just to see how long it will take. Okay, that may take a while, but in principle it grows exponentially. So it's not a good way to compute. Okay? 11 seconds. Okay. Anyway, but that's the value, whatever it is. Okay. Then I told you that I have an implementation, short and compact, of this normal ordering symbol. So basically, I remind you that O of a polynomial and then with specifications means, so you take this polynomial and you think of it as a commutative polynomial, but then, you know, typical elements of this polynomial, with typical monomials in this polynomial, would look like E1 to the 7, E2, L1, F2, okay? And then the specification is just an ordering of the variables, and then that tells you that you're going to write this polynomial in that order and get an element in the universal enveloping algebra. But since I'm... I'm allowing the specifications to be more complicated. So instead of having just one word, I'm allowing the specification to be several words. And then that just means that you're going to use the first word to get an element of U of G, the second word to get another element of U of G, so you'll be getting an element of U of G squared, and so on. So, for example, if I write, so here is a polynomial. Again, for me, functions are polynomials, right? It means power series, okay? So here is a power series in the variables H, L, E, and F. And I specify that E gets written on the first tensor factor and L and F gets written on the second tensor factor in that order. I don't need to specify where H gets written because H is central. And the claim is that this is the R matrix, is E to the H tensor L plus E tensor F. And then I think I've already done the brute proof last time. And to be honest, well, is it a proof or not a proof? So, okay, sorry, you know what? Let me do the brute proof again. So the brute proof is, well, let's set the target degree to 6, compute the exponential written here, okay, with the only distinction is, okay, and then place the elements as I should, and then check if this is equal to R12, and you hit enter, and the computer says it's true, so therefore it's true. That was to degree 6. You know, if you want to go a bit higher, let's do it to degree 8. Still true. Okay? So, and in fact, it goes rather quickly. So, is this a proof or is it not a proof? So, mathematicians would tell you it's not a proof because, gee, maybe I'll go to degree 23 and then it will fail. But to be fair and honest, yeah, you're right. It's not a proof. On the other hand, it's more convincing than a proof. If you have a proof, you can make a sign mistake somewhere. And here you can test everything, and we have tested everything, so we're pretty sure that there are no sign mistakes. And if it works, you know, it's going to work. Okay? I mean, later I will show you a full proof, okay? but an honest proof. But this, for all practical purposes, this is a proof. Anyway, I ended last time by telling you that I still have a few debts, and they are, okay, why is this true? Like a mathematician. Second, how does the program work? Because I've quoted it without showing how it works. And in fact, I haven't tested it thoroughly. So maybe, you know, maybe it's false. Okay? Or we haven't tested it. I have, but we together haven't. Okay? So how does it work? And three, well, so what do you do with it? So I think the order I want to go is, first of all, why is the theorem above true? Then what do you do with it? And if we have time, and I doubt it, I will go through the syntax here and explain how the program works. But let me just say that it's on the one hand very, very compact, on the other hand very, very dense. So it's kind of hard to follow. Okay? Anyway, so my next goal is, okay, so now new stuff. My next goal is to prove this theorem. Okay? So, proof. So, okay, you know, maybe I'll write it on the side. Okay? So, the proof is, sorry, so the theorem says that e to the h tensor L plus e tensor F is equal to, okay, so let's understand what's happening on the right. So first of all, this is an exponential of a sum, right? And in this sum, and it's a commutative exponential, so it's a product of exponentials, okay? And so this is just e to the hl times e to the something, okay? Now, I place the h outside, right? And, or it doesn't matter where I place the h, but then I place the l before the f, and I place the e on another tensor factor, and I place the f after the l. So really, I could write it as a product of, so what's written there is simply e to the h tensor L times e to the e tensor, or maybe I could write it this way, e to the h minus 1 over h, e tensor F, right? Basically, this will be placed in the right order. So that's what I'm trying to show.
It's kind of confusing because you have two E's there, but one is exponential and one is the element.
But if you look very carefully, you'll see that this E has a different font.
Oh, I see. Okay. Okay. So
that's intentional. Yeah. Sorry. Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, you're right. I mean, I should be using sort of blackboard bold E for the exponentiation. Okay, anyway, this is happening inside, so this identity is written in U of G tensor U of G, right? U of G 0 tensor U of G 0. But on the first tensor factor, you only have H and H and E commute, okay? So you can regard this as coefficients. They commute, they're just, you can write, it just doesn't, you can regard them as commutative coefficients. And then the real identity to prove is to prove that is something is that E to the L e to the coefficient times L plus coefficient times F is equal to some product of L and F. Okay? Of L's and F's. Again, with coefficients. But again, I can But this is now an identity in a single copy of U of G. Okay? Furthermore, it's an equality of exponentials. If you want, it's an equality of group elements. It's an equality. It's an equality saying that some exponential of Lie algebra element, right, from the perspective of the second U of G, this is a Lie algebra element. It's just a linear combination of L and F. So, okay, so really it's an identity of the form e to the alpha L plus beta F is equal to some e to the alpha L times e to the something times F. Okay? So again, represent it using a matrix representation, and then exponentiate the matrices. So basically, think of the Lie algebra as a subalgebra of, or as an as a subalgebra of the 3x3 matrices, and prove this exponential identity by showing that the exponential of the matrices satisfy this. Okay? So that would be a complete proof if it's true. Now, how do I check if it's true? I put it into the computer. So I compute the matrix exponential of H, so I'm thinking of H as a coefficient here, times the representation of L, so this is this HL here, plus E times the representation of F, sorry, this is this HL, times E times the representation of F, and then on the other hand, I compute the matrix exponential of H times the representation of L, so this is this, matrix multiply the matrix exponential of, well, the other factor, and then I have the computer print both of them in matrix form. Okay? So I'll get 2 3x3 matrices, and if they're equal, we win. If they're equal, we win. That's a full proof. Now,
but this is for sort of, right, so the representation is faithful?
Yeah. The representation is obviously faithful for the Lie algebra. It's not a faithful representation of the universal enveloping algebra. Because the universal enveloping algebra is infinite dimensional. But it is faithful on elements which are exponentials. Because they are just, that's Lie theory. On exponentials, I don't know what to say. I mean, if the Lie algebra represents faithfully, then so does the Lie group. Mm-hmm. So, so this is it, QED. Now, really, this is a more complicated version of how I used to do it until last week. Because until last week, I used to think, I really only care about the sub-Lie algebra generated by L and F, and it's two-dimensional. So I just need to think about, I can prove it in the language of two-dimensional Lie algebras. And the Lie algebra generated by L and F is isomorphic to the Lie algebra of matrices of the form zero zeros anything. So I could have done the same computation with 2x2 matrices. Okay? So this is actually more complicated than I needed. But on the other hand, it will allow me to prove more identities without sort of each one having some special form for it. And here you can see that the last entry was never used, in fact. It was really a computation on 2x2 matrices. Yes?
Is it really a proof if we don't know how Mathematica implements the exponential?
Oh, that's a good question. That's a general question about reliability of computers, right? Black boxes, okay? So it's not really a proof, but it's a demonstration that if I really, really wanted, I could prove it. Namely, all I need to do is to exponentiate these matrices. You know, these matrices are no big deal, right? So, let's just print this matrix. So you know what? Let me copy-paste this. Let me just, sorry. I mean, all I need to do is, okay, you know what, here is the first matrix, here is the second matrix that appears here, and here is the third matrix that appears here. Now, by the way, I mean, already here I'm using Mathematica to make computations, but clearly I could compute this by hand. And really, the claim is that the exponential of this matrix times the exponential of, sorry, the exponential of this matrix is equal to the exponential of this matrix times the exponential of this matrix. This is an exercise. First of all, these are 2x2 matrices because the last row and column are all zero. And what remains is really an exercise for linear algebra 1, you know. Exponentiate a 2x2 matrix which is actually upper triangular. Here I'm only using the computer to save myself effort. Okay? Okay, so now this identity is proven. So I can use it to compute the invariant of the trefoil. So if I wanted to compute the invariant of the trefoil to degree 3, for example, I could, one way to do it is I will take a product of three such R matrices, one per crossing. So for the first crossing, I get this combination. Right, so HL1, so the first crossing was a crossing between 4 and 1, so I get HL1, actually I should have written here H4L1, but I've done something further, I've identified all H's, I collapsed all H's to be a single H. Okay? So this is, again, this is the first crossing, this is the second crossing, this is the third crossing. And then this is a big polynomial in 18 variables in principle. No, 24 variables. Six indices and four H, E, L, and F. Okay, so this is a big polynomial in 24 variables, many of which are not appearing. Okay, and then I put the variables in the order given here, which is the order you would read them along the knot. And you'll see that there are many fewer than 24 because many variables didn't actually appear. I mean, it's up to 24 could have appeared here, but I've written only the ones that actually appear. Furthermore, the H's I've identified all to a single H, and I didn't even bother to write them because the program regards them as coefficients. And finally, just to simplify the answer, so the answer at the end will depend on H1, so just to simplify it, I convert H1 to be an H. So the answer will depend on H1 because I'm putting all of these on strand number 1, and when I commute an E and an F, I'll get an H. And my convention is that I will get an H1, because it's on strand 1. So this will compute the invariant of the trefoil to degree 3. Okay? So again, I can compute, and if I'm lucky, it's the same as before. So I don't know, let's take the coefficient of the empty word, so namely the coefficient which is dependent only on H. So 1 minus 2, I don't know, try to remember this formula here, and if we're lucky, it's the same as here, the first few terms of here. I think we're lucky. Okay, good. But this is much faster. So here is the same thing to degree 7. I don't remember where did we crash before. So degree 5 took 11 seconds, and now degree 7 took 11 seconds. Okay, that's still awful. Okay. So, okay, next. So, okay. So here's the scheme of what will happen now. So the claim, okay. So look at the expression, you know, look at the expressions that appeared here. So this is the exponential of some, well, if you think of h as a scalar, then all that remains here is something quadratic, right? There is a, or linear even. I mean, if you think of, so this L is linear, this term is linear if you think of h as a coefficient. And this is quadratic in E and F. And again, this is quadratic in E and F. So basically you get a big exponential of something quadratic. And then the question is, suppose you have an exponential of something quadratic written in one, and you interpret it in one order, then my hope is to reorder the variables so that I bring them to canonical form, to PBW form, so first all the E's, then all the L's, then all the F's, and then I'll read out the answer, okay? So that's the motivation for the lemma. So the lemma tells you how to reorder quadratics. And I'll state it, I'll prove it, and then I will tell you that once we're done with this lemma, we're actually done with the computation. We're done. This is all you need. Okay? So, first statement is, the claim is that e to the gamma l plus beta e, so gamma and beta are scalars, or commuting things. So e to some multiple of l plus beta times e, so written in the LE order, is equal to something else written in the EL order. Now, in general, I want to go from unordered things to ELF order. So this is farther away from ELF than that. So this is going in the right direction. Likewise, FL can be written in terms of LF. And then there is a very hard theorem, the very hard lemma, which says that if you have a beta E plus alpha F plus delta EF, in FE order, then it becomes some mess in EF order. Okay? Not a horrible mess, but some mess. Okay? So, again, let me brutally prove it, and then tell you, and then show you that that's all you need. Okay? So, the very brute proof is to say, let's compute left-hand side and right-hand side. So here is the left-hand side of number one, right? So I put, I here, this is the exponential appearing here, and I order it in LE order, and then this is the right-hand side of, this is the exponential appearing here on the right, and I write it in EL order. And remember that I throw in h bars to make things of the right degree. Okay? So basically these two things should be the same. So here is one, here is the other. Visually they look more or less the same. So now I'll just do the same thing, but ask the computer to check if they're equal, but also compute it to degree 6. Okay? So 2°6, and the answer is true. Okay, so we've proven the first lemma. Likewise, the second part of the lemma. And, oops, what? What have I done? Oh, no, this is, sorry. This was the second part of the lemma, and this is already the third part of the lemma. And I just wanted to emphasize that you get complicated mess, okay? But when you, okay, now, if you compute to degree 6 and say, with nu equals the thing that it should be, so 1 plus h delta inverse, let's check if the ordering of the left-hand side in the FE order is equal to the ordering of the right side in the EF order. And again, why did I convert H1 to H? I suppose I could have equally well written here H1 and everywhere else written H1. But for some reason, I preferred to, I wrote it with H's and then converted H1s to H. So, true. Good. Now, if you want honest proofs of this, sorry, not honest, you know, if you want better proofs of parts of it, so here they are, and then I will explain why it's not the whole thing. So, you see, this equality is just one exponential is equal to another. Right, this equality, you know, let's interpret it. So, gamma and beta are scalars, right? So this is really the exponential of a sum of two things which do not commute, but nevertheless, it's the exponential of gamma L plus beta E, and, sorry, what am I doing? Sorry, this is a commutative exponential, okay? So it's the product of two exponentials, but then it's written with the L's before the E's. So the thing written over there is E to the gamma L, E to the beta E. And the thing written on the right-hand side is again a commutative exponential, so it's a product of exponentials, but now the E's appear before the the L's, so this should be E to the, now the E part is E to the gamma, sorry, E to the gamma beta E, you're right, it is confusing that E appears in more than one role, times E to the gamma L. So again, this is just a commutation relation of 2x2 matrices, or 3x3. So let's check it. So E to the gamma L, E to the beta E, is it equal to E to the gamma beta E, E to the gamma L? Or, and everywhere it's not L, it's rho L, meaning the L represented as a matrix. So let's compute it. And the computer says they're equal. Again, this is, I could have done it by hand. It's a stupid thing that I could have done by hand, but why not let the computer do it? Likewise, for part 2 of the theorem, and part 3 of the, sorry, of the lemma, and part 3 of the lemma I cannot do. Part 3 of the lemma is beyond the scope of this kind of computation. Why? Because I have here, the left-hand side has E to the beta E alpha F delta E F. Let's interpret this. Okay, so let's see what the left-hand side means. The right-hand side is the same but worse. Okay, so let's see what this means. So, okay, so the left-hand side is so you know what, let me first, so this is a product of three terms, right? And the three terms are something with E, something with F, so something with E should come at the end, something with F should come at the beginning, because I'm putting it in FE order, and then something delta EF. So the E and F terms are easy, So basically, the f term should give me an e to the alpha f. The e term should give me e to the beta e. E to the beta e. So that appears at the end of the expression. And then in the middle of the expression, I have e to the delta ef interpreted in fe order. But that just means sum as k goes from 0 to infinity, ef to the n, sorry, ef to the k divided by k factorial. But ef to the k written as first f then e's. So f to the k, e to the k divided by k factorial. So that's the left hand side. Okay? And the claim is that this is equal to whatever is the right hand side. But the point is, this is not an exponential. I cannot use matrix exponentiation. It's in the part of the universal enveloping algebra on which the matrix representation is not known to be faithful, and presumably is not. I don't know how to prove it. Or I do, but I don't know how to prove it. The tools are harder. Okay? So at most I can prove it when delta is equal to zero. If I set delta equal to zero, then the hard term drops out, and then I can prove it. So, you know, this is really not where the point is, but still I can do it. So, here it is. Proof of delta equals to zero. So, I took both sides, I've set delta equals to zero, that's what's left, and that's the proof. By the way, what is this identity? Do you recognize it? So, okay, you may have seen the Weyl commutation relations in quantum mechanics. Whatever. So this is the Weyl commutation relations. So the only two things that appear here are F and E. I mean, scalars and F and E. And the commutator of F and E is H, which is a multiple of the identity. So this is really like the Heisenberg commutation relations in quantum mechanics. And then this is how e to the p commutes with e to the q. So it's a standard thing in quantum mechanics. But, you know, it doesn't matter what it is in quantum mechanics. The point is, here it is proven. Okay? But unfortunately, this is the small part. The big part is the big part was brutally proven to be true, but we still don't know how to analyze it mathematically, like old time mathematicians, classical mathematicians.
But, so, like, if you have these formulas, then it's very easy to check. But how did you come up with these? I mean, it's like a different story, right?
Like if that's a different story.
Yeah, like if I didn't know what the formulas are.
That's a different story. I mean, how did I come up with them is, well, you know, long story, which eventually we will go through, but not right now. Okay? And, you know, this morning I realized that I have a better way of deriving them, but that's a different story. Okay? Anyway, okay. So now I have now I can state a theorem. So I mean, I have to tell you why I went through these identities. Okay. So here is a theorem. So the G0 invariant of any S component tangle can be written in the form the ordering of omega times e to the l plus q, where you take the ordering to be, well, on each component of the tangle, it's the lth ordering. So really, this shouldn't have been a product. It should have been, I should have done it a tensor product. Yeah. So it's really, on each component, it's an elf ordering. And where omega is a scalar, but when I say scalar, I really mean a rational function. So it's not really a scalar, it's something that depends only on h. And to be precise, as a function of h, well, a priori, it's some power series in h, but this power series is really a rational function in the variables hi, so there is one h per component, in their exponentials, so if you denote e to the hi ti, then that's also allowed. So, you know, here is, for example, a rational function in e to the h and h. That's where the rational functions are coming from places like this. Okay? And then, L, the thing here, so L is a balanced quadratic in the variables hi and lj. With integer coefficients. So a balanced, when I say a balanced quadratic in two sets of variables, I mean, an expression like sum aij hi lj. Okay, so it's a balanced quadratic with integer coefficients. The a's are always integers, or ultra simple. And finally, q, and q is where half the complexity goes, or most of the complexity goes. So q is a balanced quadratic in the ei's and fj's. But the coefficients are scalar. Scalar is worse than integer, right? Integer is integer, and scalar means rational functions in many variables. Okay? Furthermore, if you declare that all h's are the same, and therefore all t's are the same, then the invariant that you get is computable in polynomial time. And furthermore, the programs that compute it are about, you know, three lines, are really, really short, but that will come later. Anyway, well, you know, maybe I'm out of time, but maybe I will tell you that after, so this is the raw version of the theorem, and it's the one that sort of comes more naturally, but then you can polish it a bit and do a few changes of variables. And so if you make this change of variable, then instead of rational functions, everything becomes polynomials and only in the exponential without the h's themselves, so only in the t's. So everything becomes more efficient. But this is just polishing. It's not really it's the same theorem, slightly polished. And again, this should have been a tensor product. Okay. So I am out of time, but next time I will tell you that basically the first lemma shows us that if you have a single crossing, its invariant is as promised. So the exponential of L plus Q, where L is a quadratic in H and L with integer coefficient, the coefficient being 1, and Q is a quadratic in E and F with coefficient being rational functions. Okay? So so for a single crossing, the theorem is true, and then the lemma allows you to, you know, to combine crossings, so you combine crossing, multiply the corresponding expression, you have to reorder the elements, and then the only thing you have to check is that all of these reordering operations preserve the form written here. And it's easy to check, but sometimes a little bit sneaky. So it's not, you know, the proof of this theorem is human proofs. It's a human proof. I'm not going to type any computer code to prove it. Okay? I still have debts, of course, but I keep track of the debts, so that's fine. So let's continue next time.